Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. Coming to you from a rainy, cloudy Southwest Florida today. We're into that season where we have the rain every afternoon, but we need it. Hey, how are you today? Lots of email from all you folks today. I had a chance to answer quite a little bit of it, and I'll get to the rest of it as soon as I can. But we've got a great guest coming up for you in just a little while. We've got Ambassador Craig Murray from the United Kingdom, former ambassador to Uzbekistan, and he's going to give us his take on the terrorist plot coming out of London, and he's in a position to know quite a little bit about it, and should we be wary about it, should we not? We will look forward to talking to him not too long from now, actually. What else? Oh, I want to congratulate Jack Carter, won his primary out in Nevada, and he's going to be running against Ensign for the Senate out there. Hey, Jack, you think you can pull that one off? I think you can. I mean, Ensign's popular, but we've got one Democratic senator in Nevada, and I don't see why we can't get another one. So we just have to keep beating the drumbeat day in and day out about the Republican failures to keep us safe. You know, it goes back to the old question back when Reagan was running and way back when. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And let me ask you, are you better off now than you were 6 years ago? Are you? Are you safer now than you were 6 years ago? The answer is no, hell no. Are you better off financially, most of you, than you were 6 years ago? And again, the answer is no. Is America better off than it was 6 years ago? And the answer is an unequivocally huge no. Much, much worse off. So we've got to keep letting the public know that every day. You can bet the Republicans are going to be using their mantra, cut and run. They're already starting to use that day in and day out. Hey, and I do have to tell you, I had heard a nasty rumor that Senator Mark Pryor, Democrat senator from Arkansas, is going to support Joe Lieberman, not the Democratic candidate Lamont. I called and got a hold of my folks over at Pryor's office and had a nice little chat with them about this. And I'll be damned, Pryor is openly going to support Joe Lieberman over the Democrat. And to make matters worse, you know, Pryor is on the committee to get Democrats elected, and yet he's supporting a man who's not a Democrat. Go figure. I think Pryor should resign from that committee. Unquestionably, Pryor should resign from the committee to get Democrats elected, because in the case in Connecticut, he's not trying to get a Democrat elected. He wants to get an outsider, somebody that's not a Democrat. Joe Lieberman wants to get him elected, not working for Lamont. I think it's shameful. And Mark Pryor, shame on you. And I let my feelings be known, and I hope all of you will do so as well. That's doggone shame. And once again, let me see, 866-546-5254, and we get all my homework done here. 866-546-5254, we hope you'll give us a call. If you're in Washington, give us a jingle on 202-370-6153 from the Washington Bureau. And we have, of course, the Phoenix Bureau at 623-444-5252. All right? So give us a call. Terror, terror, terror. The Republicans are obviously going to run on terror again this year. It's worked for them twice. Karl Rove doesn't see any reason why it won't work again. If you're stupid enough to believe it twice, you'll believe it a third time. That's what he thinks. The question is, will most Americans believe it once again? And, you know, terror is the point of terrorism. Terror is some sort of uncontrolled fear which terrorists choose to create in our society. And the number of deaths is not the point, as we've said that many times on this program. The number of people they kill is not the point of terrorism. The amount of terror inflicted upon the American people is the point. Killing a lot of people inside the United States can create that fear, you know, making big buildings fall and killing lots of people, and that'll create fear. But if terrorists, well, just take for example, what if they went around loosening the lug nuts on automobiles around the country, killing about 5,000 unsuspecting people? People might notice it, but would it create the same level of terror? The point is not the death, but the fear of death. Don't ever forget that. So how can we defeat the terrorist objective? What can we do to make the efforts of the terrorist as minimal as possible? The answer is, don't be afraid. When those of us who are afraid of these people, remind us of the fear they inflicted, the terrorists win just a little bit more every single time. And, you know, we had a plot the other day that was uncovered, maybe genuine. It may be something, big and bad and nasty. It may not. But once again, American people become scared all over again. And with this in mind, we should all be sickened by the efforts of the Bush administration to continue reminding us to be afraid, be very afraid of the terrorists every single day. That's all they want to talk about. You know, every time they bring up 9/11, we should remember that more than 42,000 people were killed in automobile deaths that particular year in 2001. 42,000 got killed in automobile death. How afraid were you of car wrecks that year? We need to remember that 28.5% of all the deaths that year were caused by heart disease, not terrorism. Did y'all walk around worried about heart disease that year? I don't think so. We need to remember that 400,000 people died that year. Deaths related to tobacco use. Did everybody walk around in a state of fear because of that? No. If we really should be fearful of death, we should change the way we live. And if we refuse to change the way we live, then we really need to shun those who dwell on terrorism as a real fear. And they're just using it and using it and using it. And I'm not saying that we should ignore terrorists and let them commit their heinous crimes. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. But we should battle them as the criminals that they are. What I'm saying is that we should not fear them. If we fear the terrorists more than we fear death by heart attack or stroke, then the terrorists have won their objective. And if we fear death by terrorism while we sit in front of the TV smoking a cigarette, you know, eating fried foods and making excuses as to why we don't exercise, then the terrorists have won the battle of fear. And make no mistake about it, they are winning the battle of fear. And you know who their accomplices are? The Republicans. The Republicans are the terrorist accomplices because they are fear-mongering day in and day out. And when we overreact to the terrorist threat by giving up our liberty, the terrorists have won. Why don't we outlaw all the objects of death in our society? We don't outlaw guns. We don't outlaw liquor or tobacco because freedom is an American right. So why do we go to such extremes as to spy on our citizens or invade sovereign countries? A lot more soldiers have died in Iraq than the lives saved by that debacle. I'll tell you that right now. You know that. Just remember, when your leaders tell you to worry about the terrorist threat and provide hardly any money for coronary disease research or health education. There were, you know, even stem cell research. They're working for the terrorist. Bush and his entire administration are accomplices, aiding and abetting the terrorist every single day, not by helping create the terror, but by helping to publicize it. You could say that the Bush administration is nothing but a huge megaphone. Every single day, they've got their talking heads. They've got your drug junkies, Limbaugh, and your Hannity's, and your O'Reilly's, and all the talking heads they have on all the TV shows. Terror! Terror! Be afraid. Iraq, 9/11, terror. Be afraid, Americans. Be afraid, very afraid. But don't you worry. We Republicans will save you. We'll make you safe. What was that stupid saying Bush said yesterday? I don't have it down, but it, you know, basically it said we've made you safe, but we're not safe. I mean, that's the gist of it. It was just that stupid. I just can't remember how it went for sure. But man, oh man, they are milking it and milking it and milking it for all it's worth. I get so tired of it every single day. Every single day, more and more terror from this administration, and they just are, well, playing on the fears of the American people. Just think how many millions of Americans out there are swallowing this hook, line, and sinker every day. And think how many terrorists this administration has created in the Middle East. They don't want to own up to that, but they've created thousands of new terrorists. They've created perhaps hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people that hate this country now because of their actions in the Middle East and around the world. The Bush administration has aided and abetted terrorism just as sure as they were terrorists themselves. And possibly even more cynical, more dastardly than what the terrorists do. The Bush administration has used this terror on our own people, which is absolutely just, it's disgusting. It's really disgusting. I'm going to go to a little break now, get a hold of our guest over in England, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go away.
My strange nation has ocean on two sides, and the Bama crimson tide in the south, tilted slightly toward the north. The immigrants pour forth, seeking Phoenix and life hand to mouth. My strange nation tilts sharply to the right, with our leaders straight and white as our teeth. Our population's mixed, but our election's fixed in my strange nation, America. My strange nation, built on the backs of slaves who were sailed here across the waves from far away. This cruel experiment was ended by a president who was both a Republican and gay. My strange nation gave the Indians our germs. They surrendered on our terms, as in died. Their survivors filed appeals, so we gave them roulette wheels in my strange nation, America. But my strange nation has lost its mind again, sending young women and men off to war for reasons that aren't clear, unless you're standing near to the rich and the righteous and the poor. enamored of the cross, and who will win the toss of the coin? The circus and the bread distract us from the dead in my strange nation, America. Lakes, tornadoes and earthquakes, for its poets and pioneers, for its fetishes and fears, for its freedom of dissent, for its greasy government, and I will not change this.
Yes, indeed. We're back with you. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as promised, we have on the line right now Ambassador Craig Murray from the United Kingdom. And Ambassador, it's a pleasure to have you along with us today.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Isn't it wonderful, the modern technology? Just a simple phone call away from South Florida to the UK and... wonderful age we're living in some ways, and other ways not quite so great. Ambassador Murray, if you would please, would you give our listeners a little bit of your background there in the UK?
Yes, I was a career diplomat for over 20 years. I worked my way up through our foreign service. In the course of my career, I did some interesting stuff. I negotiated a peace deal with Charles Taylor in Liberia and the rebels in Sierra Leone. I was in charge for a year of successful attempts to block Iraqi procurement of weapons by covert surveillance of their secret attempts to buy and ship weapons around the globe. And I finished my career as ambassador in Uzbekistan from 2002 to 2004.
Very interesting career. Very interesting career. And while you were involved, let's say as in your final position as the ambassador to Uzbekistan, did you have security clearance and could know what was going on in the deepest, darkest secrets in the UK?
Yes, certainly. I had the very highest levels of security clearance pretty well throughout my career, but they were raised, to the level where I could see absolutely anything. At the time when I was in charge of the efforts on Iraqi weapons, so I really got a great deal of experience with intelligence work.
Well, the reason that we wish to talk to you today, I know that you have an opinion and have been following closely the latest huge story, not huge just in the UK, but here in this country and possibly around the world as well, about this plot that Michael Chertoff said that we were days away from unimaginable horror. Can you tell us, were we only days away from unimaginable horror from this plot?
That doesn't seem very likely from what we know at the moment. The police arrested some 30 people here in the UK. And those people have been arrested and held now for more than a week, which they can be. They can, under UK anti-terror legislation, people can be held up to 28 days nowadays before they're charged. But it doesn't mean they have to be held that long before they're charged. If the police have good evidence, they can charge them straight away. And after a week of questioning, no one has been charged yet with any crime. And that reflects the fact that the police haven't found a single bomb and that none of these people had actually bought an airline ticket. That makes it, you know, a little hard to believe that a plot was actually so developed we were days away from a massive attack. If this is genuine, and from my experience in such matters, it's also extremely difficult to believe that the authorities wouldn't have allowed these people who were all under surveillance to proceed a little bit further towards reality, for example, buying the air tickets, in order to have something to go to court with. So really, I'm very, very suspicious about all the hype surrounding this and the lack of physical evidence to support it.
Well, I understand that many of them didn't have passports and that the process of getting a passport in the UK is somewhat lengthy.
Yeah, typically this time of the year, it will take you 8 to 10 weeks if you apply for a passport to turn up. These people were all, I believe, British citizens, but we're told, police sources have told journalists, that several of them did not have passports, which would make it quite difficult to get on a plane and blow it up, of course.
Well, I'm also told that they were under such close surveillance that at almost any time, this thing could have been shut down almost immediately. What do you know about that?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. It does appear that there is a germ here somewhere, that perhaps there'd been some dagging on internet chat room. Of course, you always have to worry to some extent in this kind of scenario as to whether there's agent provocateur work going on as well, because we're told that this group of people have been penetrated by agents, and you know, often you've got the case as to whether agents are egging people along to say stupid things. But there's a huge gap between gagging about something or even fantasizing about something and actually carrying it into completion. So it's very, very difficult to be sure just what was happening here in the absence of any actual bombs, and that does seem to be definite. The police have announced that they found one handgun and one rifle, but no bombs. And plainly, you wouldn't have been able to get the handgun, let alone a rifle, onto a plane, and they would seem to have no part of this alleged plot, you know, to blow up planes using liquid explosives. But, you know, it's worth stating again, no liquid explosives have actually been found.
Well, if you, I don't know if you've been keeping track of close track of the American press, but if you have, you would notice that Michael Chertoff, ahead of Homeland Security, and George Bush have just about been taking personal responsibility for catching these fellows themselves. As I understand it, even the Brits had some help from Pakistan in this business.
Yeah, but this is one of the strangest things about the whole case, that these people had apparently been under surveillance in the UK for a year. Nothing from that surveillance within the UK had indicated the need to move in and arrest them. Then some information comes from Pakistan, from a gentleman who's been detained there, and who's being interrogated. And you know, in my quite substantial experience of these things, he's being interrogated in Pakistan in an alleged terrorist incident. He's almost certainly been tortured. He has then come out under interrogation with something to say that this plan is imminent and naming people back in the UK. Well, you know, under torture, people will say anything at all that they think their torturers want to hear in order to make them stop. So, really, you know, it's not wise to go big publicly on that kind of unreliable information because it's liable to prove a bust. And, you know, there are many signs that a lot of aspects of this are proving a bust. There just isn't the physical evidence to back this up. And the high-level involvement of politicians who are so keen to terrify us all with the war on terror and possibly keen to distract us from other things that are going on in the world, you know, is very suspicious. And one possibility here is that, you know, this may have eventually developed into a genuine terrorist enterprise, but we will never know. And one possibility that seems to be an extremely strong one is that the politicians, Bush and Blair, who we are told discussed this before the arrests were made, have pushed the security services to act before they were ready to act, before things had developed enough to get any evidence. So there's a real danger when politicians are seeking to use law enforcement operations to manipulate headlines. You know, you start wondering what's driving it. Is it a political imperative for headlines that's driving it, or genuine concern for safety that's driving it? And you know, I have the strongest suspicions in this case that it was the Bush administration's need for some distractions at a particularly difficult time politically. That's led to this thing being hyped out of all proportions in reality.
Well, we have politicians on the right quoted as saying here just the same day it was announced that this is going to play well in the United States. In other words, they were going to make some political hay off of it, and I suspect the same is true for Mr. Blair.
Yeah, I think that's true. You'll know far better than I particular political calculations in the United States, but over here, one of Mr. Blair's ministers had resigned the day before over the issue of missiles and bombs being sent to Israel to bomb Lebanon, which had played extremely badly with the public here. And members of Parliament had been demanding that Parliament be recalled back from its holiday in order to discuss Lebanon. There was an awful lot of unhappiness that the British government wasn't working for an immediate ceasefire. So there was a great deal of political pressure, which did in fact evaporate once this terror plot, new 9/11 explosion in the media happened. And for the next 5 days, all the media bulletins were dominated. The first 20 minutes of every news bulletin was about this new 9/11. But did it actually exist? But there's really no physical evidence that it did.
Well, here in our country, I can tell you that, yes, this story has a way of erasing all the rest of the news. For example, during the Lebanon crisis, you would not know that the Iraq war was still going on. You would not know that Afghanistan, that they were still fighting there. And, of course, when this came along, all of a sudden the Israeli-Lebanese story was gone as well. This took everything else off the front pages. That's all we heard for several days.
Yeah, I think, you know, in a lot of these cases, you've got to apply the old Latin maxim of qui bono, who benefits. And undoubtedly, I think the Bush and Blair camps have perhaps succeeded in gaining, you know, the kind of media coverage they want, the kind of media coverage that allows everyone to think that they are brilliantly defending us against a terrible threat, and that we all have to fall in behind them. I'm sure they've been very, very happy with the media coverage. And that's really where, particularly when you've got, you know, politicians discussing operations before they happen and determining the timing of operations, that you're getting more into the theater of security enforcement than actual security enforcement. And that's what I think we have here.
Well, I agree. We're here. We're just less than 100 days away from a very important election. The politicians on the right are very much wanting to take the national security issue and make it at the forefront of their politics. So we look with a sort of a jaundiced eye at everything that comes across like this right now, or whether it's true or whether it's not, and time will bear that out. Can I ask you, what is the man on the street in Britain? How did he feel about the plot? Are Brits terrorized, or are do they look at this with kind of a casual, you know, just a casual glance?
I think opinion's quite sharply polarized here. It's more polarized than at any time in my lifetime. You know, a lot of people take the view that yes, there's this absolutely terrible threat. There's a new and rather scary debate going on now about profiling at airports, where there's a big call going out for all Muslims to be searched and effectively no one else to be searched, you know, for them to profile who is a danger, which is effectively anyone brown-skinned. And a lot of this, to be honest, seems to verge quite easily over into not very well-disguised racism. And there's an element of that in popular debate at the moment which I really find quite scary and you know, quite a remarkable development in the country I love and have served. Then, you know, there's the other side of opinion which simply doesn't buy it at all. My mother, who's not a political lady at all and who's approaching 80 years old, and she went to a meeting of the Women's Institute in the small village she lives in the county of Norfolk here, a very rural county, and she phoned me up when she came back and she said, do you know, she said, all the ladies at the Women's Institute, none of them believe in this terror plot at all.
And
if you're losing that kind of audience,
yes,
of old ladies in a country village, then the government really has got real, real credibility problems there, I think.
Well, it seems to me that you have, we have our Michael Chertoff here, you have your John Reed there. He was one that put everybody on notice about this whole thing. You had some interesting things to say about John Reed that I'm afraid I had never done any research on him and didn't know some of the things about John Reed. Can you tell us a little bit about Home Secretary John Reed?
Yeah, John Reed is a fascinating character. He was, throughout his student time, and he did a doctorate, so that was quite a lengthy time, nearly up until his early 30s. He was a very prominent member of the Communist Party in Scotland, and he had a reputation which was frankly violent, there's no other word for it. He then was, in the early 1990s, a very strong supporter of Karadzic and Milosevic and the Bosnian Serbs in their attacks on the Bosnians, and he actually has openly acknowledged that he spent several days as Karadzic's guest at a lakeside villa in Switzerland. Karadzic, of course, is now the number one wanted person on the international war criminal list, and he took that view in the early 1990s because he viewed Serbia as the successor of the Yugoslav pan-communist ideal. So he comes from this really hardline Stalinist background. Then suddenly he translates himself into the Labour Party and very meteorically rises to power. But this is a gentleman whose political background has no respect for liberal democracy, if you like, and individual freedoms at all. I'm someone with a Stalinist political orientation in the past, and I should say that communism is and has been split into many fringe groups, and you get many different types of communist, Euro-communist, and Maoist, and good knows what else. But the Communist Party of Great Britain, to which John Reid belonged, and which he was a very senior member, was avowedly Stalinist. And it's a very, very peculiar background for someone who's now in charge of the justice.
I should say it is. It's a very fascinating background. I dare say, I'll bet 99% of Americans had no idea as to the background of this gentleman. I have contended on this program ever since before we went to war against Afghanistan that the way to handle terrorism is not through sending in an army of 100,000 or 150,000 men, that it should be a police action, that it should be an undercover action. What do you think about that? With your experience in Uzbekistan, you've seen a regime there that is no stranger to terrorism and to torture and so forth. What do you think about how they've handled this, if this all comes out to be genuine?
No, I think that's right. The way to tackle terrorism is through quiet police work and through winning hearts and minds in the community that the terrorists spring from. Now, you don't do that. And the one thing we're not doing is winning any hearts and minds in the Muslim community. With Afghanistan followed by Iraq, and particularly Iraq, because Iraq, it can never be said often enough that Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. And then supporting Israel against Lebanon, and whatever the causes of that particular spat, and there's a long history of Middle East problems. I think it's very hard to see Israel's reaction as proportionate. All of this massively upsets the Muslim communities, and then when you add to that by saying we're going to profile them and pull out Muslims and search them at airports, and we're going to keep arresting Muslims, and over 1,000 Muslims have been arrested on terrorist charges in the UK, and less than 20, that's 2%, have been convicted in court at the end of the day.
Oh my!
And this kind of harassment of Muslim communities is really going to turn them against us. Well, we don't need to be invading countries. You don't stop terrorism by invading other countries. That's the way you start terrorism. You stop terrorism by quiet, careful, intelligent police work, working within the communities from which the terrorism springs. And terrorism isn't new. We have this extraordinary idea that this is all some new phenomenon. I was knocked off my feet, literally, by the blast of an IRA bomb 20 years ago. Terrorism has existed in one form or another pretty well as long as political institutions have existed. It's many hundred years since Guy Fawkes tried to blow up Parliament.
Ah, Guy Fawkes. I celebrate Guy Fawkes Day every year. I have a great British friend that he writes me a card every year on Guy Fawkes Day. you're right, and terrorism isn't anything new, and George Bush speaks about stamping out terrorism and stamping out evil, I contend as long as humans are populate this earth, that we'll have terrorism, we'll have evil. And I mentioned that during the fight taking place between Israel and the Lebanese, the Hezbollah, I know what I was going to say. If Blair thought it was such a good idea to let that go on, and he and the Israelis and George Bush were the only three votes they got in the entire United Nations. It was, 189-3, I think it was, the vote on whether to have a ceasefire, and the first time around they voted on it. If Blair thought that that was such a good idea to just indiscriminately bomb people in Beirut and all over southern Lebanon, why didn't they go after the IRA that way?
Yeah, that's day two. Why didn't we bomb Dublin or Boston, USA?
Yeah, where the money came from. That's right.
You're absolutely right. And the answer is, of course, that we used to have more sense.
Yes.
The idea that by bombing and killing a lot of innocent people, you're going to stop terrorism is clearly, obviously, a total nonsense. And one figure I like to use is that Al Qaeda had, on September 11th, Al Qaeda undoubtedly existed and it was a real danger, and it probably had, intelligence analysis is not an exact science, but it probably had between 500 and 800 members worldwide. Now, the Pentagon itself now states that Al Qaeda has 30,000 members now in Iraq alone. Are we winning this war on terrorism? No. Of course we're not. We're creating more and more terror. And the sad thing is, of course, that it's a kind of con trick that the politicians seem to be able to get away with.
Yes.
By every time they provoke a reaction by the stupidity of their policies, they manage to provoke a new terrorist outrage. And terrorism is an outrage. I mean, nobody can support indiscriminate killing. But they still manage somehow to glean a benefit from it, as though it weren't their fault in the first place. That's something I find extremely distressing.
Well, it is, and I mentioned in my opening statement on the program today that perhaps helping this terrorism along and then using it on your own citizens as a fear tactic to get reelected, perhaps that's just as bad as what the terrorists themselves are doing. I don't agree with terrorism politics, and it's being used extensively in this country, and you'll see it used quite a bit this fall, and I suspect that Tony Blair's been using it as well. The man on the street in the UK right now, how does he feel about the UK and the participation in the war in Iraq, and I call it the Bush War in Iraq? How does the man on the street feel about it now?
Well, I think in the UK, public opinion has been against it from the start, it's never favoured it, and now support for the war is down around the 25% level. But there's this peculiar feeling of designation and of alienation from the political process. This idea that nobody supports it, but no one can stop it.
Yes.
And that again is worrying. There's a disillusionment with party politics and distrust of politicians in general. And one of the strange things is that the major opposition party supports the war even more strongly than the party in power, which doesn't really give the electorate an awful lot of ways to go.
Who is poised, if and when Blair is put out or steps out, who is poised to take over that job?
It's still probably the Chancellor, Gordon Brown. He seems the most likely guy to take over.
Okay. We hear so little of anybody here, as is so typical of the American press. I have to tell you, when I want to know what's really happening in the news, I read the Guardian, I read the Globe, I read European papers and the Middle Eastern newspapers. I don't pay much attention to our papers here. That's why I had to ask you who's up next after Blair, because there's nothing in our news about it. Ambassador, I want to thank you so very much for being on our program today. You have an interesting website. It's Craig Murray, CraigMurray.co.uk. And folks can read about your opinions on the current situation there and other opinions about other things as well. It's a great website, and I so much appreciate you being on the program today and giving us tremendous insight into this latest huge story. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
Okay. Good to speak to you. Bye.
Bye now. Ambassador Craig Murray, former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, spoke to him earlier today. He knows all about, I guess we could have gone on another subject there, being ambassador in Uzbekistan, knows all about torture tactics and so forth, about the renditions that take place for us in countries like that, in Pakistan and Egypt and wherever these rendition tactics are taking place. Man has a great knowledge of many things like that, and he's a fascinating individual. Again, that website is craigmurray.co.uk, and you can read all about that there, and his archives are very interesting as well. It's good to get out of the country, and even on a little cyber trip here, and get other opinions around the world. And I know most of my listeners are very good about that, that we don't depend just on what we read and hear here in this country, that my listeners are so well informed. And I can tell you I know that because of the great email and so forth that I get from you. I know that it's very seldom I get an email from one of my listeners that's kind of daffy, if you know what I mean. Always very well informed, always great questions, and I just wish somehow, I wish somehow that each one of you could reach out and transform a thousand other Americans into being such activists and so interested in what's going on and interested enough in what's going on to get people to participate in this democracy of ours and to try and heal it, heal the wounds that we have right now. I just wish somehow we could clone this audience of ours a thousand, many thousand times and get all of America listening and participating in this democracy. So many people are content to sit by and watch as these horrible lies from this administration take place. How many times do you hear it? I know you've all heard it. I hear it from people in my own family. Well, there's nothing I can do about it. Who am I? There's nothing I can do about it. They're all alike. What makes the difference between a Democrat and Republican? It doesn't matter. They're all alike. Well, they're not all alike. And we're going to talk about that some more in just a little while. So don't go away. We'll be back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Ah, every time I hear that, I feel like getting the old drumsticks out in the studio here, maybe the guitar as well. Hey, how you doing today? Good to have you along with us here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you participating in the show. See, we got a nice audience today, and My goodness, that was great to hear from Ambassador Murray. I got a lot out of that, and I got a lot out of talking to him earlier today. Isn't it great though? I mentioned briefly, I can call the UK, France, several other European countries local calls. I mean, it's great. It's really great. I got a friend that's from the UK. He's an American citizen now, but all of his family's in the UK, and you know, just broke him up on phone calls, and now he's got a certain phone system that we have here, and it's a local call. So we are living in interesting times. We most certainly are. Where will the technology go before we're gone? I don't know. It's certainly come a long way in my lifetime. I can remember very well. Now you youngsters, stick with me on this, and don't laugh too hard. But when I was in about the, 7th or 8th grade in school, my father bringing home a transistor radio. Little one. Just, about maybe twice the size of a pack of cigarettes, maybe a little thicker. And what a marvel that was. what a marvel that was. This little transistor radio was like, wow. And now look what we can do. It seems like there's no end to it. I'm no techno wizard, but I do like to keep up with all that I can. And I'm just fascinated by all the new gizmos that are out and everything. I'm a junkie when it comes to that. I love to go to Best Buy and CompUSA and all those joints to see all the latest techno gizmos there. Love that kind of stuff. And so you go out and buy it, and you come home and you unbox it, and you get on the internet and find out they came up with something better that same day. Such is the state of modern technology nowadays. How many of you have done that? How many of you have gone out and bought a new a new computer, and let's say within the last 6 months or so, you got a 250 gig hard drive computer, and you got it home, and you go, wow, man, this is the best. This is just so great. And then you find out, they got one to 320 in a couple. I mean, it was 3-4 years ago, people were bragging about 40 gigs. I don't know. My memory isn't that good on it, but it just... And you know the funny thing about it is, you know they have the technical knowledge right now to probably double the memories and the speeds and everything else in these computers that we're using right now. They can probably make them smaller, faster, everything right now if they wanted to, but they're going to do it in increments so that we keep buying. That's right. There was an old story in the old Soviet Union. I don't know how many of you remember, but again, I'm dating myself. There was a great weightlifter in the Soviet Union. His name was Alexeyev, and he was a mountain of a man. I got to see him at the Olympics up in Montreal, and there I'm dating myself again. But Alexeyev was this mountain of a man, and as many people know, the Russians, many of the Russians in the and the Olympics at the time were actually paid. They were paid by the Soviet Union to be athletes. And they got a bonus every time they broke a world record. Well, Alexeyev was the world record holder. And he'd get a bonus every time he'd break the world record. But see, Alexeyev was smart. They'd want to add 5 more pounds onto it. He said, no, add 1 pound onto it. And so he'd break the record over and over and over again, just a little bit each time, so that he could keep getting more bonuses. I don't know whatever happened to Alexeyev, but he was quite a story back in those days when the Olympics was more of a... It was a Cold War thing. It was still the heat... In the Cold War was intense at that time. And, the Olympics were used for political purposes. They really were. Well, I know you're tired of hearing about the Olympics today, aren't you? Where was I going with this? After the top of the hour, I want to get into to talking about, how Bush and all these folks are using these things on us right now. Hey, right now, I got a little joke somebody sent me, and I thought you'd appreciate this. It's a little bit long, but if this isn't America, I don't know what is. And pay close attention, and you'll know where I'm going with it. And thanks to the guy who sent me this. He told me not to say his name. But anyway, a Japanese company and an American company decided to have a canoe race on the Missouri River. Both teams practiced long and hard to reach their peak performance before the race. And on the big day, the Japanese team won by a mile. The Americans, very discouraged and depressed, decided to investigate the reason for the crushing defeat. A management team made up of senior management was formed to investigate and recommend appropriate action. Their conclusion was the Japanese team had 8 people rowing and 1 person steering, while the American team had 8 people steering and 1 person rowing. So American management hired a consulting company and paid them a large amount of money for a second opinion. They advised that too many people were steering the boat while not enough people were rowing. So to prevent another loss to the Japanese, the American rowing team management structure was totally reorganized to 4 steering supervisors, 3 area steering superintendents, and 1 assistant superintendent steering manager. They also implemented a new performance system that would give the one person rowing the boat greater incentive to work harder. It was called the Rowing Quality First Program, with meetings, dinners, and free pens for the rower. There was discussion of getting new paddles, canoes, and other equipment, extra vacation days for practices and bonuses. The next year, the Japanese won by 2 miles. Humiliated, the American management laid off the rower for poor performance, halted development of a new canoe, sold the paddles, and canceled all capital investments for new equipment. The money saved was distributed to the senior executives. My, how true. I kind of enjoyed that. Hope I didn't bore you too much with it anyway. 866-546-5254 is the phone number. What did you think about this George Allen mess? Hasn't he got himself in a little bit of a bind there? They would have us believe that he just came up with this macaca thing, just thought up that name out of thin air. And now George Allen's sister says, my brother is a bully and a bigot. His sister? Senator George Allen's racial remarks to a 20-year-old Indian man last week has re-highlighted accusations that the senator is a bully and a bigot. Senator Allen's sister, Jennifer Allen, documents many cases of her brother's bullying in her book, Fifth Quarter, The Scrimmage of a Football Coach's Daughter. And just some of the excerpts out of the book. Explaining why she is scared of heights, Ms. Allen writes that ever since my brother George held me over the railing at Niagara Falls, Jesus, I had a fear of heights. It's on page 43 of the book. Referring to George's relationship with one of her boyfriends, she said my brother George welcomed him by slamming a pool cue against his head. That's on page 178. Referring to George's early leadership skills, Jennifer wrote, we all obeyed George. If we didn't, we knew he would kill us. Once when Bruce refused to go to bed, George hurled him through a sliding glass door. And another time, when Gregory refused to go to bed, George tackled him and broke his collarbone. And another time, when I refused to go to bed, George dragged me up the stairs by my hair. This is George Allen, a front runner for the Republican nomination for the presidency of the United States. And this came to light because he's out making racial slurs against a guy who was filming his one of his speeches for the other side, for Webb. Somebody from the Webb campaign was there filming his speech, and they do that back and forth. I'm sure Allen's got people following Webb around, too. That's politics. That's how it's done. But it looks like you saw it. I'm sure some of you saw it. Looked at, hey, macaca, and that's a... you do your own research on that. You're going to find out that that's a real slur. And he knew it was a slur because his mother is of Tunisian, French-Tunisian background, and she knows damn well what that word means, and he's heard it many times in his life. You can bet on that. So here we have one of the front runners for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. God, he sounds like he's a guy to be afraid of. I don't know. Sounds a little strange to me. Well, hey, I hope you'll hear, you'll stick around for the second hour. And don't forget, a little later on this evening, right after the Guy James Show is over with at 5 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be having Bruce Birch on with us. Bruce always has a good show. And I got to get some new promos up for the rest of the shows on the Head On Radio Network. Got to get that done anyway. Stick around. We'll be back right after the news. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Quality News Network. France is calling for Israel to lift its blockade of Lebanon, saying it's unnecessary now that a ceasefire is in place. France's foreign minister is in Beirut along with his Turkish counterpart to discuss the makeup of a 15,000-troop international force to southern Lebanon. So far, no countries have yet committed any troops to that effort. Still, the UN says it hopes to have an initial deployment of at least 3,500 troops within the next 10 to 15 days. At the same time, Lebanon is already beginning to deploy 15,000 of its own troops to southern Lebanon to police the ceasefire. This is the first time in more than two decades that the Lebanese army has positioned itself along the border with Israel. The violence continues in Iraq. Despite the addition of thousands of U.S. troops to reinforce security in Baghdad, 21 people were killed there today by several car bombs, one of them at an open-air flea market. The White House is denying that the hunt for Osama bin Laden has been downgraded. A spokesman says that instead, the CIA unit set up to oversee that search has been reshaped into a unit to deal with a more diffuse threat from al-Qaeda. A Virginia judge has ruled that a teen with Hodgkin's disease who wants to pursue an alternative herbal treatment rather than chemotherapy can start seeing a specialist in Mississippi who does both. The state of Virginia had sued in order to require the boy's parents to resume traditional chemotherapy treatment. Scientists from around the world are preparing to vote on whether our solar system should be redefined to include three more planets. That's the recommendation of a committee of the International Astronomical Union now meeting in Prague. Former President Gerald Ford is hospitalized at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota for testing and evaluation. At 93, Ford is the oldest living president in history. Former President Jimmy Carter's son, Jack, has won the Nevada Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate. He'll face Republican incumbent John Ensign in November. New Jersey's attorney general has resigned following a state investigation that she violated her department's own code of ethics by involving herself in the routine traffic stop of a friend. In Wyoming, an 11-square-mile wildfire is threatening hundreds of homes south of Casper, and weather forecasters are predicting the heat and wind fanning those flames will continue. Japan is protesting an incident today in which a Russian patrol boat opened fire on a Japanese crab boat, killing a fisherman. The shooting took place in disputed waters near Hokkaido, Japan's northernmost island. Philippines asking for help to combat that country's worst ever oil spill, which has already polluted a major marine reserve and threatens the livelihoods of thousands of fishermen. And the death toll from China's worst typhoon is more than 300. Business is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The main gauge of consumer inflation eased back last month, rising just 0.2% and reducing the likelihood that the Federal Reserve Board will need to raise interest rates at next month's policy meeting. Analysts are saying that Dell's recall of 4 million notebook computer batteries made by Sony could cost Sony anywhere from $85 to $430 million, hurting Sony's short-term earnings as well as its brand image. Big Lots reports that it turned a profit in its second quarter, beating Wall Street expectations. Clothing retailer Talbot's says its purchase of J.Jill accounts for a second quarter net loss of $3.9 million. And Abercrombie & Fitch and American Eagle Outfitters both reporting increased second quarter earnings. Researchers say that the future looks bright for an eventual AIDS vaccine. Scientists at the 16th International AIDS Conference in Toronto say that progress is slow but steady. Merck has an AIDS vaccine candidate in advanced human trials, the results of which could be available as soon as 2008. Gold is trading this hour at $637.70 an ounce. That's up $4.80. Silver is at $12.35, up 26 cents an ounce. And light sweet crude oil is at $72.18 a barrel. That's down 87 cents from yesterday's close. On Wall Street, the markets are higher. The Dow Jones is up 68 points at 11,298. NASDAQ is up 21 at 2136. And the S&P 500 is up 7. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Glad to have you back after the news here this, here it is, right after the top of the hour. So glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. Brought the little puppy into the studio today. And, we've got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Didn't know I was an American for choosing to give a damn. Or unpatriotic for daring to take a stand for what I believe in. Looks like freedom to me, expressions of liberty, wanting our America to be a responsible hegemony. Didn't know I was a communist for wanting to share the wealth. It doesn't take an economist to measure the cost of health. And what I believe in looks like heaven to me. One human family where everybody's got enough to eat, something warm to cover the feet. Didn't know I'd be labeled a terrorist.
Hey, this is what you get when you get real, real radio here today. I was about to tell you a little bit of a story right there that, as we all mentioned, not too terribly long ago, that we had a new little Yorkie puppy in the family. And as it turns out, the little Yorkie's doing real well. I'm trying to think how old she is now, about, what, 6-7 months old. Anyway, she had to go have surgery the other day. And when I went to pick her up, I was so happy when they brought her out from the vet after the surgery and she'd come around, you know, she's still a little groggy and all that. But she didn't have one of those cones on that the dogs have to wear after surgery so they won't bite at their stitches and so forth. But she had bandages on. Well, as it turned out, she took the stitches out, and they did have to put one of those little cones on. And so here we have this little Yorkie puppy. I brought the puppy along into the studio today because I got to kind of watch after it because after the surgery. And somehow she got that cone off of her head there just a little while ago, and I had to put it back on, and she's not very happy with me. I normally don't have her here in the studio, but she's in here with me today, and she's not happy at all. And I guess I wouldn't be happy either having to wear one of those doggone cones. So you weren't expecting that on the show today, were you? Yes. Well, anyway, she's sitting there looking at me. Kukla. Kukla means doll in Greek. My wife is Greek, and that's where that little name came from. Anyway, there you have it. The Guy James family saga of the dog here today. I'd love it if you'd give us a call today, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Just give us a call on that. We've got a couple lines open right now. It'd be good to have you give call in. Anyway, I was about to say, before I was interrupted, that there's a lot of talk going around Washington, D.C. right now, and I know some of you may have heard it. I have a couple of very close contacts in Washington. One of them was the former treasurer of the United States. And the other one, a family member, is, well, I'll say it, a Republican. And a Republican not very happy with George Bush, and hasn't been happy. He's not one of those neocons. Anyway, Jeff Steinberg sent over a thing that he wrote about it in this latest issue of Executive Intelligence Review. And Jeff wrote this, and I'm going to read the article to you by Jeff. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think you'll find it interesting. And I've had what Jeff contends in here. I've had this corroborated, personally corroborated, so I find it interesting. And the title of Jeff's story is "In Your Guts, You Know He's Nuts," which I think is one of the better titles for a story that I've read in a long, long time. In light of who the story's about, it says the word is circulating in high-level Republican Party circles that former President George H. Herbert Walker Bush is profoundly worried about the mental state of his son, the current president. According to the sources, Bush 41 has been communicating with his own intimate circle, including former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft. Let's see, who else is on the list there? Former Secretary of State James Baker III, along with former President Bill Clinton, about GW's over-the-top support for Israel's current self-destructive assault on Lebanon that just ended. The ex-president has reportedly conveyed to his close associates that he fears that GW is in a messianic state and is, quote, unreachable, even by such close advisors as Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Insight magazine, the online publication of the Washington Times, buttressed this account, reporting in early August that for the first time, a rift had developed between Rice and President Bush over the president's one-sided support for Israel in the ongoing Israeli Defense Forces invasion of Lebanon. Interesting. The former presidents Bush and Clinton, who have worked together on post-Katrina humanitarian relief efforts and other projects, are reportedly attempting to encourage President Bush to take the diplomatic high ground and avoid further bloodshed in Lebanon, which could spill over into an out-of-control clash of civilizations conflict engulfing much of the planet. Unfortunately, for the Bush family legacy, and for the fate of the United States and the world at large, there is scant evidence that the president is in the least interested in returning from the far side. If anything, his performance during an August 7th press conference with Rice at Crawford, Texas, convinced many previously hopeful observers that George W. Bush is suffering from what some would dare to call absolute insanity. To be sure, the notorious sociopath, Vice President Dick Cheney, has been one of the principal Bush administration architects of Israel's no-hold-barred invasions of Lebanon, and has been waging behind-the-scenes war with an ever more inept and frustrated Condi Rice over the issue. And as even the New York Times noted on August 10th, National Security Council Near East Chief Elliot Abrams, one of the leading clean-break neocons remaining in the Bush White House inner circle, has been Cheney's mole, shadowing Rice when she went to Israel and to Lebanon and then reporting back to the vice president's office to make sure that the Israeli hardliners would prevail, even if it meant they steered the Jewish state into a suicidal 30 years war misadventure across their northern border. Sources close to the White House have been reporting for several months that Cheney has been waiting in the wings for Rice's diplomacy to hit a brick wall, and at that point, the sources report, Cheney intends to step back into the limelight and press Bush to order military action against Iran. Plans have been on the drawing board at the Strategic Command for a year or more for vigorous airstrikes against as many as 40 sites inside Iran, said by the Cheney faction to be part of an underground nuclear weapons program. Furthermore, the administration has been in talks with European NATO allies and Israel over the need to take out Iran's alleged asymmetric warfare asset, Hezbollah, prior to any direct confrontation with Tehran. So from Cheney's point of view, the now ongoing Israeli incursion, the one that just ended into Lebanon, which was moving, as of the time that he wrote this just last week, into a full-scale ground invasion, it was a critical first step toward a military confrontation with Iran, and he had hoped that it would result in a regime change in Tehran. David Frum, the former Bush speechwriter who authored the now infamous Axis of Evil State of the Union address in January 2002, told the McClatchy newspapers that the reason he, President Bush, has been giving the green light to Israel and southern Lebanon is he's heading toward a confrontation with Iran. Hezbollah is Iran's strongest weapon, and that's what this is about. The United States benefits from taking away Iran's weapon. You know, it's scary when you start reading some of the things about these people. It says Bush eyes Armageddon, but for all of their imperial fantasies, Cheney and perhaps even Abrams are driven by real-world considerations like oil geopolitics and the larger drive to foment perpetual asymmetric warfare all across Eurasia to shatter the Westphalian nation-state system. They are sickos, to be sure, but not religious zealots caught up in end times fantasies and God complexes. Bush, on the other hand, and this is the scary part about this, is believed by some close observers to be in a paranoid, megalomaniacal state in which he harbors Armageddonist delusions that God personally intervened to place him in the presidency, to support Israel in the present bloody fiasco in Lebanon, and if these reports have even a shred of truth behind them, the USA, Israel, and the extended Southwest Asian region are in even more grave danger. Dr. Justin Frank, the noted George Washington University Medical School psychiatrist, who was a guest on this program not so long ago, and author of the book linked Diagnosis of the President, which we talked about on this program, Bush on the Couch Inside the Mind of the President. He detailed George W. Bush's 24-year bout with alcoholism, which only ended when the Reverend Billy Graham converted the future presidents of born-again Christianity. Dr. Frank warned in his frightening clinical evaluation of the president that Bush never recovered from his alcoholism, never received any kind of treatment for the disease, and merely adopted another mechanism to escape reality, a form of religious zealotry associated with the Christian Zionism of such latter-day Elmer Gantry types as Graham, Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson. A look inside President Bush's special relationship to Israel appeared in an August 3, 2006 McClatchy Wire story by Ron Hutchison. And I'm giving you this to give you an inside look, and some of you may have seen this, an inside look on what may be going on in George Bush's mind, his warped mind. Hutchison interviewed Matthew Brooks, a Max Fisher protege, who was the executive director of the Republican Jewish Coalition in 1998 when he escorted then Texas Governor George W. Bush and three other GOP governors on a tour of the Middle East. It was on this trip that Bush had his first encounter with Ariel Sharon, then the Israeli foreign minister, who took him on a helicopter tour of the Israeli-occupied territories. If there's a starting point for George W. Bush's attachments to Israel, Brooks told Hutchison, it's the day in late 1998 when he stood on a hilltop where Jesus delivered the Sermon on the Mount and, eyes brimming with tears, read aloud from his favorite hymn, Amazing Grace. He was very emotional. It was a tear-filled experience. He brought Israel back home with him in his heart, and I think he came away profoundly moved. In a 2005 speech, President Bush reflected on his helicopter tour with Sharon and said, "It's interesting how history works, isn't it? The future president of the United States and the future prime minister of Israel were flying across that country with him describing to me how to keep Israel secure." End quote. Increasingly, American voters are waking up to the fact that the president of the United States gives all the clinical appearances of being mad as a hatter. And I don't say that lightly. The August 8th Democratic primary vote in Connecticut, in which incumbent Joe Lieberman was defeated by the so-called insurgent candidate, Ned Lamont, was as much a vote of no confidence in Bush and Cheney as it was a repudiation of Iraq war hawk late Lieberman. And Stephen Colbert, the television humorist, had captured the essence of the Bush-Lieberman love affair in a recent TV spot which featured news footage of the president's smooch on the Connecticut senator's lips during a presidential speech before a joint session of Congress. Did he really kiss him on the lips? I didn't see that. I thought he kissed him on the cheek. I think that's an exaggeration right there. I'm not sure. And, of course, as we mentioned with the ambassador a little while ago, are they using this for political purposes? Hell yes. The day after Lieberman's stunning defeat, which you know in your heart he wasn't expecting, even at the polls, he thought he was going to pull it out at the last minute, Cheney made a rare phone call to a group of reporters in which he ranted that Lieberman's defeat represented a major victory for Al-Qaeda types. And oddly enough, the very next day, after Cheney mentioned Al-Qaeda types in reference to the Lamont campaign, the very next day, British police carried out the arrest of 24 Muslims, declared a state of terrorist red alert, and announced that a plot to blow up transatlantic commercial airliners headed from Heathrow Airport to the United States had been foiled. And then Cheney had the audacity to say that he didn't know anything about it. He hadn't known anything about it. And we find out that Bush and Blair had been discussing it for quite a little while. Odd, don't you think? At the time he spoke to reporters, you know Cheney knew of those pending British raids. You know he did. I don't think for a minute that they're going to get away with this time, using this for political gain. I have enough faith in the American electorate that maybe for once they won't be swayed by this kind of thing. Maybe, just maybe, the American electorate will, you know, say, hey, you guys cried wolf twice. It's not going to work again. Hillary Clinton, I guess you'd say, lambasted Vice President Cheney for his stupid tirade, saying, I don't think he, you know, I don't take anything he says seriously anymore. I would have said a whole lot more than that, I think. I think the Democrats need to step up a little bit. Need to step up and let the American public know that this is pure politics, what's going on now. It's starting to wind down. I think you can see that the public has grown a little tired of the story, and I see they're relaxing some of the things at the airport already. But I don't know. I don't know. I wish I knew what's going to happen. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Well, wait a minute. Let's go to the phone. We've got a couple people on the phone line. I've ignored them long enough. I pushed the wrong button here. If you called on the phone, give us a call back during the break, and we'll get right with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh.
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rapping.
It's rap.
I'm horrendous. I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of bull, so full of crap.
Full of crap.
With condescending cries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic, cuts.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am.
Cause I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, cause I'm a fat conservative, butthead, with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another story.
I have a face the size of a wash tub, and my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick, he's a fat mob, is big, and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Terry Bob! Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. It inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts.
So nuts.
I am a cyst on the ass of humanity.
Yeah.
New Republican slogan. Read my guts. From the bowels of Adolf Hitler comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a fig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative
butthead. Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass bite.
Yes.
Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative tuss.
With the face
of a horse's ass.
Making dildos, Rush!
Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And welcome back. Welcome back. We're here for the last half hour of the Guy James Show today. Don't forget Bruce Birch coming up after this show, and then Bob Kincaid after that a little later this evening. And we invite you to stay tuned to the Head On Radio Network, the best doggone progressive radio network you're going to find anywhere, anytime. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, guys, this is Sarge from powersandmorrison.com. I'm in the chat room with you.
Hey, glad to have you with us today. Well, what's the website?
powersandmorrison.com. We're proud supporters of Head On Radio Network. You're listed on our site, and we're glad to mention you guys.
Well, good.
We are very, very impressed with you. We've just recently become aware of your network, and we've started listening, and we really enjoy it. You guys are doing a wonderful job.
Well, thank you. That's we're giving it a shot anyway.
Guy, can I mention something about this woman that was arrested today for the flight?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it before I went on before we started the program today. How did that finally shake out? Did she have any weapons on her or anything?
Well, it was all a big farce made out by CNN and Fox News.
What actually
happened is she had a panic disorder. She had nothing on her of any terrorist threat. It was just a big blow up over nothing. She actually was arrested, and the spokesman for the FBI, Nanette Day, said that she is going to be charged with a crime for disturbing an international flight, even though it was a panic attack.
No kidding. Can they do that?
Well, apparently they can. I wrote about it on my column. I listed the 14 points of fascism earlier in the morning, and then when I got the story, I printed it, and I said, well, check this out, man. This really falls into about three or four different categories of fascism.
Oh, man. I had heard that it was a possible panic attack, and hey, you know, that's an awful thing, a panic attack, and people many times just don't know where they're at, what they're doing during a panic attack.
Well, Guy, you know, I live down in South Mississippi in the Katrina Head area, and down here, everybody has a panic attack because it is just outrageous. And in fact, I write the Hurricane Center at Powers and Morrison as well, and some of the stories that are going on in Jackson County, Trent Lott's home county, and his ignoring them is just outrageous. And we even had a four-year-old girl who tried to kill herself, drowned herself, because she said the waters took everything I had.
Oh, dear.
And nobody cares. My nation doesn't care about me, so why can't the waters just take me, too? Mm. And it turned out that grandmother, who keeps the child, had been trying to get her help for some time. And all the agencies would not give her help. Fortunately, my friend was associated with Jim Yancey, who is the head of the Jackson County Children's Coalition, and he managed to get the girl some help. But that's the way it's going in Jackson County. We got people with good incomes eating just cereal and milk because that's all they can afford. My twin sister lives in Goshen, Mississippi, which is in Jackson County, and she eats one meal every 3 days because that's all she can afford.
Well,
so you see, the terror is George W. Bush.
Well, and that's, you know, the story's not on the news anymore. Nobody cares anymore, do they? I mean, I know a lot of organizations that were in there that have pulled out, and every once in a while I talk to somebody like you. I talked to a gentleman just last week that moved to this area from New Orleans after that happened. And, you know, he had to go back home. And, you know, there's nothing left there for him. He came back and said nothing's changed.
Well, you know, guy, one of the big things is that Jackson County got hit worse than anybody, and that's not even mentioned. Jackson County is not getting any news press except for Powers and Morrison, and there is so much going on. That's why I cover it, and fortunately at Powers and Morrison, we do cover the Katrina hit area really well. We have people from New Orleans bloggers, and just myself, so we really cover it, but
explain Jackson County to me. Exactly where is it?
Sure, it's the county that's closest to Alabama. You have Pascagoula, Ocean Springs, Moss Point.
Where in relation to Biloxi?
It's east of Biloxi. It's right across from the bay, what they call the back bay.
Okay.
From Biloxi, you go into Ocean Springs when you cross the bridge, or what used to be the bridge, is totally destroyed. They're not even going to have it started on 2009. So it starts at Ocean Springs.
Okay.
But it's really it's a smaller county than Harrison, and I put the statistics on my site some time ago, probably last week or week four, and it shows you how many homes were destroyed or major damage was done, and when you compare the population with what damage was done, you'll see that Jackson County was just almost wiped out. And Trent Lott has done nothing but block legislation that would help with mental parts of it. A lot of the grants that should be coming in are not going in. You call the governor's office, and he gives you a runaround about how good everything is going. So
you got Haley Barbour as your governor now, right?
Oh, man, this guy, he's as big a Nazi as Bush.
I see they are getting the casinos rebuilt, though.
Oh, they got rebuilt fast.
On land.
Really done fast. And I just, you know, it's just disgusting. Fortunately, I'm further inland, so most of my area has kind of recovered from it. We're paying like ungodly electricity bills. My electricity bill, and we normally run all $100 or less. My bill this month was $300-something, so it tripled.
Why?
And it's only going to get worse.
Why is it so high?
I don't know. I'm going to check into it, and I'm going to write about it, because I believe this is part of Cheney's energy solutions.
Yeah, well.
Guy, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much for calling, and we'll check out your site, and best of luck to everybody down
please
in that
do.
Area.
You guys keep up the good work. We're really proud of you guys.
Thank you. Bye now.
Okay.
Oh, man. Every time I hear a story that comes from down that area, you know, we have been led to believe, not those of us who pay attention to things, not our listening audience, but the American public has been led to believe that things are much better there now, and they're not. Oh, yes, in some areas there things are better, and people are rebuilding, and thank God for that. But there are other places down in that area where things have improved so very little. And there's so little help coming, and the damned insurance companies have screwed people so bad in some of the places in that area down there. I always seem to say that backwards, that they don't want to pay because people didn't have flood damage, and it was water that tore their houses down from the surge, and they won't pay because they say they didn't have flood damage. You know, what an asinine contention, and I certainly hope people will. I know there's one class action suit that I know of. I hope people will win that against these insurance companies and face the same thing where we live here. Hurricanes hit in this area, and especially just a little bit north of here. And we got hit here as well. But insurance companies, I've got such disdain for most insurance companies. They've come into an area and take premiums for years and years and years and years and don't make any claims, and that's why you pay the premiums in case something does happen, and they weasel every way they can. They weasel out of paying you for this, that, and the other thing. Have little clauses in the policies that people didn't even know about. Deductibles, oh my God, deductibles that people weren't aware of. I know a person in a county right next to us here in Charlotte County, Florida, that had a $450,000 house, and they had it insured for that, and the insurance company weaseled and weaseled. I mean, it's gone. And they end up getting $109,000 out of it, I think is all it was. It's happening over and over and over again. And so they think there's going to be a big, busy hurricane season again this year. And what do? They cancel everybody out. Now you wait. They'll be back. They'll be back. And the former insurance commissioner here in the state is running for governor. And he's got a damn good chance of getting elected. Insurance commissioner here was found to have been dealing in stocks, buying and selling stocks in insurance companies. Imagine that. Buying and selling stocks in an insurance company while he's the insurance commissioner. Wow. Amazing that somebody's it's getting to be so in your face nowadays. Hell, they don't even care. They just do it right out in the open. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, listen, I just want to make a quick comment and hang up. That was a great call you had from Mississippi, and I just wanted to make a comment on the insurance companies. Insurance companies are like a bookie, but the difference between them and a bookie is when it comes time to pay up, the bookie normally will pay you up where an insurance company won't.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. They are a bookie, aren't they?
Yes,
I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah, but when it comes time up, the bookie will pay, but the insurance companies, they kind of hide away from it. Listen, Guy, I just want to make that comment.
Thank you, Bill.
Back your phone.
Thank you. You're very right. Very right. Insurance companies are bookies, yeah. I guess you could say that. Hey, there have been people have their butts saved by insurance companies, I know. But there's been a whole lot more profit. Did you ever stop and think about all the money that's made in this country off of nothing? Off of nothing tangible. Did you ever think about that? Wall Street, the insurance companies, the banks, the interest that's paid and so forth. Hundreds of billions, probably trillions of dollars made off of nothing intangible. Aren't we an odd bunch, we humans? Yeah. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call. I see Denny Hastert flipped his lid again the other day. You know, is he competent enough to be Speaker of the House, or did they just pick him because he was a stooge for him, do you suppose? I've been trying to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. They say he's a nice guy and all, and so I know a guy that knows him really well up in Illinois, and so I've been trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but then I find out he's got this land deal near this highway project of his that he's making millions off of, and then he says something, well, he says so many things that are just downright stupid, and I hate to say that about Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives, but did you catch what he said the other day talking about the U.S. borders? They were asking him about what do we need to do to seal our border. He was on a WLS radio station show in I don't know what morning it was. It was this week, maybe Monday morning. He had a phone interview on there, and they asked him about protecting the borders, and he said, "I always say, if we can protect Iraq's borders against Syria and, you know, Jordan and every place else, Iran, we can protect our own borders." Now, here we have a gentleman that is Speaker of the House in an administration that's been claiming they actually haven't officially been claiming it, but they've been inferring for a long time that Saddam shipped all of his WMDs across the borders to Syria. And they've been claiming that people are coming flocking in from Iran and Syria as insurgents with al-Qaeda and all this kind of stuff. They've just been complaining about that all the time, that, oh, we're doing what we can, but, you know, the people are coming across the borders. And then he says, if we can protect Iraq's borders against Syria and, you know, Jordan and every place else, Iran, we can protect our own borders. Denny, were you hitting the bottle that day? Were you? I don't know. I have to wonder. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
It was funny you talking about insurance, and that was really on my mind yesterday, because every time you turn around, you've got some kind of insurance that you've got to have, or you can be in serious trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering when we the people can get together and do something about it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's at the point of being ridiculous.
Well, a lot of people are insurance poor, and
absolutely.
And then, you know, you have medical insurance. You think you do, and you go to the hospital. You go to the emergency room, and then you start finding out about all the deductibles. And yes, we probably should have all read the fine print a little closer, but
I don't. You know, there's no way you can get out of that. But there ought to be somebody smart enough to think of something besides what we've got, and, you know, that would be helpful. You know, you don't mind paying for something that's helpful.
Well, it's the same with health insurance. When I was a younger man, I had a health insurance policy, and you know, I paid them, and when I had a claim, they paid it. I mean, it just wasn't any problem. And things have changed so much now. They've done so much to try to get out of paying things that.
Yeah, there was something that was that the court had found for them yesterday that was not going to be good for the people. I don't know what it was. Do you?
No.
But I don't know which court, if it was the Supreme Court or what. I just heard it in passing. But they said it was not going to be good for the people.
Oh, no, I missed that. I had a busy day yesterday.
Well, there's so much going on, you know. How can you keep up with everything? That man from Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
I've heard him on Mike Malloy's show. He is excellent. He's really excellent. He's really trying to help people down there in Mississippi. And I remember when he was calling in, he hadn't got any lights in yet, but he did finally get lights. But, you know, Haley Barbour, that was another thing that was on my mind. I thought, well, I haven't heard anything from him lately. And, you know, he just, to me, is one of the, he's another one of my most despicable people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think he's just despicable.
Yeah. He was involved in Republican dirty tricks against Democrats during the last election and so forth. Now he's Mr. Clean. He's the hero governor of Mississippi now.
I'm telling those people everything's going good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, this. Like, well, we're still working on my roof, trying to get. I was surprised at how much water damage there was.
Oh, it's amazing. People don't understand. People in the north. I could take you over. I'm 2 hours from Miami here. We could get in the car and drive down a few streets in Miami that I can show you every roof on the street is blue.
Got
the blue plastic tarps on.
Too.
Yeah.
And also the man from England. That was wonderful.
Yeah, he's a very knowledgeable man. I was lucky to have him on today.
You have such good interviews. You're so good at it, too.
Well, thank you. We try and get interesting people on, and we've got a lot more of them scheduled coming up.
Yeah.
It's
common sense people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for.
There's so many things we need to change, you know, for the people.
Well,
there's so many things could be so much simpler.
We're going to have to take a stab at changing things this fall. First of all,
goodness, yes, I hope and pray.
We got to get our brooms out and sweep a lot of these people out of office.
And your little doggy okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You said something about it. And all
sitting here with that, that doggone cone on. I don't blame the little doggy.
Has one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know. Banging into everything and all that, and got the sorry look on its eyes, you know, like, oh, please don't do this to me. And I feel just as bad. I do.
Yeah.
I I'm telling on myself here. I never was a guy that liked little dogs.
Uh-huh.
I had Great Danes and, you know, big dogs.
Uh-huh.
And haven't had a dog for a long time, so we got this little dog, and I'm afraid she's just stolen my heart, you know.
Yeah,
she really has. So I, when she's,
the
when she's,
you guys change like that.
I know. We're well, you see, the conservative people, they'd look at us and say we're a bunch of weenies for admitting it, but doggone it, I've got a soft spot in my heart for animals, and I was born and raised on a farm, and I've you know, seen lots of bad things and good things with animals,
sure,
and I still have a very, very soft spot in my heart for animals, and I always
will.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call, Juanita.
Okay, have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Terry up in Fort Myers.
Hi, Terry.
I know you're getting kind of short on time, so I just wanted to throw something in.
Got plenty of time. Take your time.
Yeah, it's... Okay, you were talking a little bit about, you know, money being made off of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, actually, that's not an actually correct analysis, because there is no money being made. It is a shifting of the money from one place to another. Because there's no product, like you said, there's nothing being created, so it's just a shift of the money.
Yeah.
Kind of like a numbers game.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's like playing
true.
The lottery. That's what it's really all about. It's just a shifting of the wealth. That's all it's doing. There's a lot of that.
Yes.
Okay, like for example, I day trade. Okay, and I trade currencies. Okay, I'm not creating anything. I'm not buying anything. I'm not selling anything. I'm betting on the difference of whether it's going to go up and go down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, make quite a bit of... there's some really good money to be made. However, it's not being made. It's just being shifted.
Well, yeah.
I didn't do anything to make any money.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see your point. Tell me, I suppose you and everybody having a talk show, and the people that hate you, you know, they sign you up for every bit of spam they possibly can, and I get... do you get inundated, and do the rest of the listeners, you all get inundated with these penny stock things every day? But, hey, buy this now. It's going up, you know, I must have gotten 50 of them today.
Right. What I have done is I got a program to guy to build my computer. I'm not a computer guru. Don't ask me. I have no clue. When I push the button, if it don't come on, Houston, we have an issue. You know what I mean? But he puts some kind of deal on there, and it's running all the time in Outlook. And as they first come in, I just put in whether I want this IP address blocked.
Mm.
Okay, and I only do it one time, and then it never comes in there again.
Oh, good. Yeah, if you find out what kind of software that is, send me an email and let me know.
Okay, I'll get a hold of Troy and see what the deal is.
I'm a target for all that stuff, and I know other people who are in a similar position that, you know, we get tons and tons of email that it's hard to filter out all the spam.
I have to keep the wife off of a lot of these crazy sites, you know, like Home and Garden stuff, you know, and remodeling, and gee, man, he wouldn't believe some of the garbage I get.
Well, maybe she thinks your sites are crazy.
Well, you know, hey, around here, okay, the TV is only on two stations. It's either on 46, which is whatever, that Disney Channel or whatever, or it's on Home and Garden TV or that TLC or whatever it is where they're redoing houses.
Oh.
Something having to do with housing stuff, you know.
I see.
Wife is either watching it or the kids watching the Disney thing.
Well, if she's watching that Home and Garden channel and those house remodeling things all the time, you must have one heck of a honey-do list ready for you around there.
Oh, you got to see this place. If you don't like the way it is today, just hang out. It's going to change. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
There's more paint on the inside of this place than in the last 10 years than probably most places see in a lifetime.
Well, keeps life interesting, huh?
Oh, God. You know how women are. And what are you going to do? You say something. I found out that is not the right thing to do. Don't do that again.
I've found out to just paint it and shut up.
You got it. That's the whole gig. Which color do you want it, and what room do you want it in?
I'll do it right away, dear.
And the sooner it's done, the quicker it's all over.
Yep, that's right. Get her done, as that guy
I'm
says.
I'm domesticated. I've been trained.
That a boy.
Well, I'll let you get, buddy.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Well, we've had a regular, we've been as we used to say, around Robin Hood's barn today on the program. We've talked about dogs and what else? We've talked about home remodeling and insurance, and we've been all over the place today. Even talked about present-day politics. I've been looking at a lot of things that the Republicans are going to do. As you know, they're gearing up right now. As you know, they are extremely worried that they're going to lose the House and possibly the Senate. They're extremely worried over that. And they're plotting and planning every possible thing that they can to save themselves. And they, I want you to be ready, because you're going to see an all-out campaign like you've never seen before. You're going to see some of the dirtiest politics this year that you could ever imagine, and lots of it. You're going to see spending this year during midterm elections like you've never seen before. You're going to see record amounts of money being spent on governorships and House of Representative races and Senate races. You're going to see lots of records set for the money. And isn't it going to be interesting to see how much money flows in? Number one, to the Green Party in Pennsylvania right now, trying to getting that candidate up against Casey. Going to be interesting to see how much money they raise and where it came from. And I'll bet you 99% of it comes from Republicans. And I'll bet you a good portion of Joe Lieberman's money is going to come from Republican pockets as well. They would like nothing more than... You know, I think it's shameful. Did you see that Schlesinger last night? Isn't that his name? On Tweety Bird show, I think it was last night. I lose track of time. You know, asking him. I mean, he seems kind of like a kooky guy anyway. But still, the Republicans ought to be backing him. That's the way it is. They shouldn't be backing Joe Lieberman, but they're going to. Don't be surprised at all if Joe Lieberman, if he gets elected, to see an R behind his name. The Democrats are talking about taking away his seniority, which absolutely they should do. If he's no longer going to run as a Democrat, they should take that D off behind his name right now. I don't know what the official rules are, but if he gets elected, you know, as a Lieberman Party candidate or whatever he's calling his party, I don't want to see him come running over to the Democrats and say, "Hey, boys, how you doing? I'm back." Uh-uh. Take his seniority away from him. Absolutely take his seniority away from him. It wouldn't be right. And I hope the Democrats will show some spine and show some resolve. Call Senator Pryor in Arkansas. Let him know what you think about that, about him not backing the Democratic candidate in Connecticut when he's on the committee to get Democrats elected. I certainly let him know what I thought about it, and I hope you will as well. Let's see, do I have his phone number around here someplace? It's a 202 number, of course. What did I do with it? Don't have it handy. I have to get it for you tomorrow. But I think it's shameful. It's absolutely shameful. I don't care if they're good friends. I don't care. When it comes time to run for election, you got to back your party. And Joe Lieberman he's betrayed the Democratic Party, and he's betrayed the American people. We now know that 60% of the people are against the war in Iraq. Every politician that votes anything in favor of that war has betrayed the American people. And I want to repeat it one more time, said it many times, I will not back any candidate for president who A, voted for the war, or B, voted for the war and has not admitted they were wrong or apologized for it. I will not. And I'll stick my neck out as a Democrat. I don't care. I don't care who the candidate is. They better not be saying they're for that war. They better not be saying it, because I won't back them. And I've been a Democrat all my life, but I'm not going to stand for it. It's the most pressing issue we have. It is, you know, people think, oh, it's just the war. It's just the war. No, it's much bigger than just the war. The residual effects of what is going on in Iraq now are tremendous, having a huge impact on the welfare of this country, bankrupting this country. People, do they forget about that? It's not just the war. It's not just the fighting that's going on. It's not the lives that are being lost and all that. The most tragic part of it is the lives. But it's also bankrupting this country. Spending money we don't have. Throwing a burden of debt upon our kids and grandkids. It's just not right. And yet, the American public, oh well. My congressman, yeah, he voted for the war, but he's a good guy, and I'll put him back in office. And he's a Republican, and I'm a Republican, and I'll put, you know, enough's enough, folks. Enough's enough. Go out and talk to your neighbors. Get in touch with people. You know what to do. Hey, yeah, it's coming up. It's time. Everybody's getting cranked up, starting to walk precincts.